This hour, we're talking about video games and addiction and what parents can do about all of this. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, board certified in couples and family psychology. He specializes in working with teens and families. Ryan Sipes is an entrepreneur and co-founder of the artificial intelligence company Mycroft AI, currently at the Sprint Accelerator. They're both here talking about this issue, and you're welcome to join us too. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Leslie from Overland Park. Leslie, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi, Steve. Hi, Dr. Crenshaw.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian. I have a 14-year-old son who, it was a little over a year ago, they have to have electronics as part of going to school now. They have laptops and in his middle school, he had an iPad, and he was one of the students who just really, really had a problem with it, because a lot of kids were chatting, and some were playing games while they were in school, but his grades were affected greatly. He was taken out of the gifted program because he just wasn't keeping up. And so I had a breakthrough talking to him the other day. He actually asked me he wanted to buy a game online that he said it's a different type of game that doesn't, I don't remember the name of the game, I apologize, but he felt like it did not encourage him nearly as much, just keep going and keep going with more levels and more levels. So I'm wondering if you have an idea on a type of game to maybe help a kid kind of wean off game playing a little bit. He would laugh at the idea that he's addicted, but he is.
That's right. How old is he, Leslie, or how old was he when he was addicted?
He's 14.
14,
but yeah. At the time, he was 13 in seventh grade, and it was a real problem. We had to talk to the principal, the vice principal, the school psychologist, and so they had to disable some features of his iPad.
Wow. Well, and Leslie, hang on a second. I gather this problem is not unusual at all, is it, Wes?
Well, I'm gonna address the school part of it, and then maybe the idea of apps that are less enticing.
Types of
Ryan
games,
can
yeah.
speak to. My wife is the Kansas NEA Teacher of the Year, and one of the finalists was one of the finalists for Kansas Teacher of the Year. And so we sit around and talk about education a lot in my home. And she is currently adapting to blended classroom, where they're going to be using a lot of this. And she and I both have some real reservations. And this goes so far beyond the scope of this show, I'm just going to say I, too, am worried that the inclusion of technology in classrooms has a really sexy sound to it, like woohoo, let's get on the bus or we're all gonna be left behind. And we have, as always, not spent the time understanding the problem. You know, I think Ryan probably ought to be Secretary of Education, because he could get in there and figure out how to deal with all of this. But the generation deploying these technologies is not as clever as the generation consuming them. And so I think we're probably not headed in a good direction on that.
So I'd like to elaborate on that. The problem, technology is a foregone conclusion. Nobody in their right mind could say to a student, you'll never have to use this technology in your workflow. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can learn, you know, your English and your math and all these other subjects, but computers and interacting with them and using them for communication is not important. That would be silly. The problem I see is the IT decision makers and the people who are making, and the administrators at schools especially. And I spent 2 years doing contract work for various schools. And the funny thing was, is that oftentimes the very people supporting the technology weren't involved in the decision making on what kind of technology was adopted in the schools. It was all about, you know, what does the administrator like to use? What's sexy, you know, in like, what can you bring some of your board members through and be like, hey, look, you know, we got these iPads, that's new and cool. You know, students are going to use that.
Has there been any accommodation made for kids like Leslie's son who might get hooked on these things or spend time playing games instead of doing their homework?
Well,
which I guess you could do whether you have a laptop in front of you or not.
There's no way around it. Like, you can't remove the technology from the
it's
students.
Where we are. Yeah.
Because you'd just be ill. It would be ill-advised because they would not be prepared for the workforce because they wouldn't have familiarity with this technology, especially low-income students who might not have access to it at home. But, and this is kind of a tangent, but we can make smarter decisions about what kind of things students are exposed to at school, what kind of experiences they're exposed to. And I wanted to just circle back around. We shouldn't be trying to fix the problem by saying, let's get them stuff that is less engaging, like asking about a less engaging game. Like, no, don't try to find a less engaging game for your son, because less engaging isn't what you want. You want something that's more engaging than the games he's spending all the time playing.
Even for someone like Leslie's son who's addicted?
Not a game. I'm saying, like, you have to find something that's more engaging than
the
games.
Educational.
But that's easier said than done, though, isn't it, Ryan?
It's not easy. The people want some kind of easy answer to this. You're going to have to actually sit down, have conversations with your son about his long-term goals, about what he wants to accomplish in life. It's just like anything else, you know. It takes planning. It takes educating, you know, your
children.
But
in the meantime, if Leslie's looking for something, some type of activity that would be more engaging than the game her son's already playing, where can she go to find out what that is, what that might be?
You're not gonna like my answer. The local library.
No, I don't like that answer.
Find things that engage.
How about going to one of the gaming stores and saying, those guys know all that stuff? I mean, they'll try and sell you something.
But
right?
If your son's problem is that he's playing too much games, he probably has other interests other than games. It's engaging with him on those other interests and letting them play a larger role in his life. What happened to me was I loved making games. And so that's what I would play games, and then I would make games. The interesting thing was that allowed me to evolve to, I'm no longer just making games. I'm programming applications. I'm programming other things. I was able to take my interest in technology and use it as an outlet to pursue other things. I'm sure that that if you really wanted to play less games, you take an interest that he has, and maybe that's video games, and you point him in another direction. Like, would you like to make video games? Would you like to write reviews about video games, you know, things that allow him to grow as a human being.
Leslie, we're trying here to help. I hope we are at least a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. And luckily, he's very interested in music, plays the saxophone. But I just need to somehow help him have that take over. But the fact that he suggested a game, maybe he was just trying to snow me, I don't know. But the fact that he suggested a game, because we talked for quite a while, he said he felt like it was something that he could more easily spend smaller amounts of time on. So
right.
I think he does want to change, and he sees it is a problem, but it's difficult.
And that's a big step forward, I would think, Wes, if he's recognizing the issue.
Sure. And the reality is, I don't want to admit Ryan is right about all this stuff, but he is. That's why I hang out with him, is he does get this for as a young man. And I think that part of the learning process in school is twofold. One is it must be regulated. That is what teachers and educators are there for. So limiting and making sure that the systems are set up to stay instructional, that's part one. And then part two is that when young people are out in college and the workforce, they're going to have to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be involved with all of this technology. And we know businesses are struggling with filters and things to try to keep people on task so pornography or fantasy football or whatever doesn't take over, or the NCAA basketball tournament doesn't take over their lives. So self-regulation and the parent teaching self-regulation, which I think you are very much working toward, is critical, and that's never going to change. The machine isn't going to do that for you.
That's right.
Well, Leslie, I appreciate your phone call. We wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thanks so much, guys.
You know, again, if our listeners are just joining us, we're talking about video games and video game addiction here. Leslie's son, Dr. West, 13 years old, male, I imagine that's about the sweet spot for that time in a life when a kid might get addicted.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are two schools of thought on this, and they interestingly parallel exactly the AA model, the Alcoholics Anonymous model, 12-step model, and the what's called the rational recovery model, which is the cognitive behavioral model that says you learn not to drink or do whatever by teaching yourself to do it in a sensible, moderate manner. And one side of this argument is saying abstinence. They're saying, and they're actually saying, get it with kids before they even get started, just shut it all down, kind of the Luddites of the world. And the other side is saying, what I was saying earlier, is teach self-regulation. But that, and if you do not start that at about 7 or 8 years of age, it gets harder and harder every year. And too many parents, I'm sure none of our listeners have fallen into this, but too many parents have found these are wonderful digital babysitters when the kids are 6, 7, 8 years old. I saw one that was no more than 3 the other day, fascinated with the iPad at the table, just intensely working on it while his parents were having dinner and visiting. And he looked like he was going to launch a rocket to Mars. He was so into that iPad. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but only in moderation.
Gabriel emailed us this, Wes. We don't allow our teens to access video games long enough to get addicted. They don't have smartphones. They have tablets, and we have game consoles, but they are limited in how long they can access them each day. 30 minutes a day, if they behaved, is not long enough to get addicted, I don't think. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's is going in between the two schools of thought that I was saying, and mm-hmm. I would generally support that. We do some similar things in my home. One of the things the kids do is earn time on the video games, and what the most of the national authorities are suggesting is kids not have more than about 2 hours of screen time a day. Mm-hmm. I have never run into anyone, that's all screens, I've never run into anyone who's really pulled that off, but there's a lot of evidence that if you make that what I have always referred to as a dessert, that you eat your dessert after all the healthy things are done being eaten, and you play your video game after all the necessary things are done, then that's a way to make it a rewarding process and not just cut it out of your life.
Right.
I think parents and educators should be rejoicing, because what games have done is they've managed to tap a sweet spot, for how to engage people for long periods of time in order to accomplish tasks.
Cheryl emailed us this comment. I've been playing a game the whole time you've been on the air. 58-year-old female, she writes, been playing games for years, relaxing, made longtime game friends. I think it improves the brain thinking through gameplay.
I was going to say, the thing is if we look at this, and I tried to say this earlier, and I don't think I got across, if we look at this as an adversarial relationship, between a type of media and parents or educators, I think you're going to lose out on all the benefits that you gain from this. Surgeons, for instance, will oftentimes play video games, to calm themselves, to get those nerves down, before they engage in surgery. And there are other examples of this. I know I have a friend who's in high finance, and sometimes stuff can get really stressful and he needs to clear his mind for a few moments. He'll sit down and play, something kind of like Flappy Bird or whatever, in order to just bring it down
Flappy
so he can
Bird.
Make
Never
good
heard
decisions.
Of Flappy Bird, Ryan.
There's
yeah.
a long story that goes along with that.
Yeah. But if and employers too, if you don't look at what games are succeeding in doing, if you don't look at how they engage people, and you don't take those lessons and incorporate them into education or child rearing or any of these things, then you're really losing out on what we've determined is a great way to get people engaged in doing things, I don't want to leave before I say, the app that my employees and I are using is called Habitica, so Habit ICA, and it's all about building good habits, through gamification. And there are lots of things like that out there on, that exist now.
It's really a cutting edge of motivation in the workplace.
So, Dr. West, walk with Ryan's comment just a step farther here. What should parents be thinking then, if those parents out there listening who might have kids who are playing, they think are spending too much time doing this, what should they be thinking about?
Well, I think that there's a what's called the broccoli factor here, is that educational games have always been a little bit too much like broccoli for kids, and they're trying to develop games that really do teach mm-hmm. good, strong messages and engage in the way Ryan is talking about. An odd correlate to this, I was watching Teen Titans the other day with my son, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. They taught a whole – this isn't even supposed to be an educational show – and they taught this whole lesson on how to purchase commercial real estate and rent it out, and it was – picture-perfect accurate. And the funny thing is every few minutes the characters would be like, this is really boring. Oh, my God, we're going to go to sleep. And it turned it into a joke. I couldn't stop watching it. It was and it was perfect. It was absolutely accurate. The more you can engage kids that way in a game, that's just a little TV show, but the more you can engage kids in the game atmosphere like that, then the more they're going to learn, they'll stay with it.
You know, and Ryan, just before we lose this show here, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, is our conversation about all this going to be completely different as we're sitting here, you know, on the dawn of artificial intelligence and a whole new generation of gaming coming down the pike?
Yeah, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, where the rate of change, especially around these really immersive experiences, are going to continue. It's just going to continue to accelerate. The thing that you have to be really cognizant of is how to use these technologies to your benefit, how to use these new, they're not bad. They're going to open up brand new industries. They're going to open up new ways of teaching, thinking, and just like any other emerging, you know, industry in the past. So many conversations we have, yes, there's an addiction problem, but there's anything in excess is a problem.
But it's just hard for parents to know how to navigate this minefield when they don't know what half this stuff is.
And that's what
there's a problem, right?
Yeah, that's what I would challenge parents to do. If you wouldn't, you know, let your kid go to a place you've never been and spend 12 hours there, you know.
Well put.
And so why don't you sit down and spend, I know days get busy and stuff, but before you let your child play a game for, you know, 12 hours straight, sit down and play that game for 30 minutes yourself. Make sure that you know what kind of experience it is so you're able to engage with them on that level and talk with them.
That's a great point. You know, we're out of time here, and I'm really sorry we couldn't get to all our calls. Sean and Rachel, thanks for holding on. Sorry I couldn't get to you. I wanted to cover a couple of other topics here with our good guest, Dr. Wes Crenshaw, board-certified couples and family psychology, works with teens and families from his offices in Lawrence. Wes, always appreciate your time.
See you next time.
Ryan Sipes is with the artificial intelligence company Mycroft AI. Ryan, nice to have you, too. You offered some great contributions today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.